You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
In October 1970, Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau imposed the War Measures Act. The act gave the police the right to arrest and hold people without charging them. The result was that in addition to a few FLQ radicals, hundreds of innocent citizens in Quebec were arrested and detained. In June 2010, without the use of the War Measures Act, similar events unfolded in Toronto. In response to vandalism by a handful of members of the Black Bloc, police arrested and detained hundreds of peaceful protesters. The Canadian Civil Liberties Association believes that the G20 may prove to be as pivotal a moment in Canadian history as the FLQ crisis. But whether that event will lead to a strengthening or an erosion of democracy in Canada depends on how Canadians respond to the events in Toronto last year. Nathalie Desrosiers is General Counsel of the Canadian Civil Liberties Association, and she joins me by phone this morning from Ottawa. Hello, Nathalie.
Good morning.
Let's briefly discuss the scope of the police and violations at the G20 summit. How many people were detained and how many were charged?
There's over 1,105 people that were arrested, and way more, obviously, were detained to be searched, and we don't have full numbers on that, but it's in the thousands. Currently, there's very few people that actually have any prosecutions being held against them, because most people were just released without charge, or their charges were just abandoned and dismissed, so there's less than 20 charges going forward. So that's the worry, is that people were just arrested, detained, they spend time, some people spend 36 hours in jail, for no reason.
And during those, people were detained, were they generally, did they have access to the rights that we would expect, rights to a lawyer and so forth?
Well, what we've seen, we had monitors on the ground then that had been trained to kind of do an assessment, and they were impartial. And we saw not only people being stopped and searched for no reasons, we saw also people that were arrested, and then when they were detained, we had one of our monitors arrested in one of these mass arrests, no right to a lawyer. We could not get in touch with him for over 24 hours. It was quite a scary time. You know, you expect that somewhere else, and you just then in Canada. So it was a nightmarish, really, as a weekend.
Now, in November of last year, the Canadian Civil Liberties Association held hearings on police abuses at the G20 summit. What did you find?
Well, we did the hearings partly because many people had been calling us after the G20. We had, because we had monitors on the ground, we had released a preliminary report calling for a public inquiry, calling for some attention to what had been going on. And if you've been following the news a little bit, the process is quite torturous in terms of getting some accountability here. In November, we had so many people calling with their stories and their testimonies that we thought they deserved to be heard in public. So we held the 3 days of public hearings. By no means we could not hear everyone that wanted to speak. But at least we made that possibility available, and, you know, many people came and shared what they had lived and what they had witnessed as well. The conclusions were essentially that confirmation about the mass arrest, about the ways in which people were badly treated, some pretty unruly behavior on the part of some police officers, not from all, but from some police officers, and that's worrisome.
And what about training for police officers in advance of the G20? Did you have any findings there?
Well, our view is that something went wrong. At the G20, you had, you know, it was over $1 billion in terms of expenditure. You had close to 20,000 police officers in the city, and there's a handful of Black Bloc who are left a little bit alone to do the vandalism. And thereafter, you really have disproportionate attacks on peaceful protesters. People were sitting, singing "O Canada," and then the police would come and massively what they call kettling, which is they are all around you and you can't move, and people were panicking. It was quite a scary thought. So certainly either they were badly trained and or the threat was badly communicated with them, was overblown, or indeed there is something more sinister at play here, maybe, and we need to know, and that's the reason why we're calling for a public inquiry.
Now, in addition to the hearings that you conducted, there's also a full police inquiry underway. What do you expect to come out of that?
Well, there certainly are different processes that are underway, some that are quite limited. The Toronto Police Commission has decided to do a review. What is interesting here is that it will not be able to look at the behavior of the RCMP or the Ontario Provincial Police in that context. And that's worrisome because the way the security was organized, it was very much a joint venture, if I can use the term, between the RCMP, between the Ontario Provincial Police, between the Toronto Police, but also there were police officers from all over Canada, from Montreal, from Calgary, from Fredericton, from all over the province of Ontario. So now the process of accountability is divided by jurisdiction, and it makes the job so complex.
Well, that's interesting to have the accountability by jurisdiction, but of course it was combined forces and organizations which were present at the G20 policing.
And that's why we're and you're right. And that's one of the issue here is I think if you're going to have a massive security effort that implicates several police force, you have to think ahead of time what will be the process of accountability and not rely on processes that are limited in scope and that make the job of getting some answers almost impossible now.
I want to explore a couple of the other things that are going on. I understand that the Ombudsman of Ontario has also launched an investigation. How has that unfolded?
Well, the Ombudsman did an investigation and completed it earlier in the fall. And he did find that the government, particularly in enacting, you may recall they enacted some secret regulations to increase some powers of the police that were badly communicated to the public, that did not apply throughout the city, only in certain spots. It was a real difficulty in terms of what exactly was the situation there. So they certainly suggested that this was highly inappropriate. What's interesting is that the Ombudsman does not have jurisdiction to compel answers from the police. So the Toronto Police decided not to participate in that inquiry, which limits, again, the usefulness of these processes. So, you know, in our view, we need a public inquiry that's public, that has the power to compel answers, and that will be comprehensive, that would look at the whole picture.
Now, I understand that some people have taken a different route and are looking at a class action suit. Do you think that could be more effective or less effective than a public inquiry?
Well, both are not mutually exclusive. The best thing in our view that could happen is that public inquiries be held that would provide some answers as to what went wrong. And based on what the findings, then the government could decide to settle or not the class action. The class action basically does provide some relief on some people that have been, incarcerated for 36 hours for no reason, for example, or kettled in the rain for 5 hours. It may provide some answers, but the process of class action is very long, and it's uncertain, and people are not in it for the money because they're not going to get much money for this, but they really are in it to get the answers that do not seem to be forthcoming any other way.
Now, clearly you've been calling for a full public inquiry. Talk about how that such an inquiry could be more effective than these other investigations that we've talked about.
Well, as I said earlier, I think one of the issues here is that it was a joint venture in security. It was fairly unique as a model to have all these police forces cooperating together. There may have been some issues in the way they cooperated. Maybe the communications were not ideal and so on, and that may have explained some of the abuse or some of the miscommunication or some of the mistakes that were made. But in a way, I think what we're trying to suggest here is that it was done in with cooperation of different police force to have now individualized and limited processes of evaluation and accountability just doesn't work. This doesn't wash in terms of the need for a recognition that what went on is wrong and it should not have happened. It's important that we maintain the Constitution, the protection of our constitutional rights, and just to sweep it under the floor and divide all this in six or seven now small inquiries that look at individual behavior may not be sufficient.
What can people do to support the Canadian Civil Liberties Association call for a full public inquiry?
Well, we on our website there is some ways in which to write your MPs. I think it demands some federal leadership here. It was their money. Our money through them, I should say, but that funded the entire security endeavor. The RCMP was the lead player in this, and up to now we haven't heard much about how much what responsibility they're taking for this. So I think write to the MP and support us. Call us and support our call for a public inquiry and more generally to continue to bring accountability for what went on at the G20.
Very, very much appreciate your speaking with us this morning, Natalie.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye now.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Natalie DeRosier. She is the General Counsel of the Canadian Civil Liberties Association.